If you will, please turn to Daniel chapter 6. Turn to the Old Testament prophetic book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 6. There's a saying, man proposes, God disposes. Man can propose all he wants, but in the end, God will have the final say. And that's what we're going to learn about in Daniel tonight. Daniel chapter 6, page 862. 862 if you're using the Bibles there on the chairs.
Daniel what?
Daniel chapter 6. Chapter 6, page 862. And so we've certainly seen throughout the book of Daniel, Daniel's courage, the courage of his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We've seen their faith, we've seen their loyalty to God, we've seen them stand up under great duress, we've seen them take a strong stand for the Lord and maintain their courage and their convictions in the face of imperial edicts that would call them to deny God. We come to Daniel 6. In the story world of Daniel, Darius the Mede is the new ruler. And if you will, let's just read through this and we'll learn some lessons tonight. We'll read about the determination of men, but we'll also see the determination of God. Man may determine to do certain things. We'll see that there's a plot and a conspiracy against Daniel. So there's the determination of those that are against Daniel. There's Daniel's determination to continue to worship God and pray just as he has always prayed. Then there's the determination of the king, Darius the Mede, and we'll see his determination going in a couple of different directions. But in the end, we'll see the determination of God. And it's his determination that overrides the whole story, that prevails over everything else that man is doing. And there's some interesting parallels here. So, Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. That the king would suffer no loss of good administration. The king would suffer no loss of control. The king would suffer no loss of faithfulness and loyalty and so on. The word satrap, that's the title of an administrative official. It's one who ruled over a major division of the Persian Empire. And we might well imagine there were 120 provinces or 120 districts. And they understand the title means protector of the kingdom. They were usually chosen from the Persian nobility, often from the royal family. The satrap was virtually a king. He had his own court and absolute civil authority. He answered directly to the great king. But to ensure the satrap's loyalty to the king, other officials who answered directly to the king were appointed to work alongside the satrap. Often there'd be a secretary who was in charge of official correspondence, maybe a chief financial officer who collected the taxes, and a commander from the armed forces. Of course, the king was always concerned about everybody being faithful and loyal and devoted. He didn't want to see any political coups going on in the kingdom. So it seems like Darius the Mede was a little more open-handed in terms of delegating authority. He was willing to give this responsibility to 120 administrative officials who also had in their own right a lot of authority. And then there were these three governors to whom all the satraps had to answer. Daniel was one of them. And that's rather amazing. Because Daniel, as you know, he was one of the captives that came from Jerusalem. And God in his mercy has allowed Daniel to reach this very high position of responsibility in the ancient Babylonian and also in the Medo-Persian kingdoms. Verse 3, then Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. I mean, do you imagine what King Darius is thinking of doing here? Making Daniel the number two ruler in the whole kingdom. Daniel would be right under the authority of the king himself, and everyone would have to answer to Daniel, who in turn answered to the king. Well, you can imagine this would have stirred up a lot of controversy. There'd be a lot of jealousy and a lot of rivalry going on, a lot of resentment. So verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could not find any fault because Daniel was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. In other words, Daniel fulfilled all of his political duties quite well. You couldn't fault Daniel for how he handled himself in fulfilling his administrative duties. He was also faithful in executing his duties and responsibilities, and he was certainly faithful to the king. So they couldn't find fault. Boy, that must have really bothered these other governors, these two other governors and all those satraps, or at least some of the satraps. They must have been all upset, you know, to think that this Daniel's going to get this big promotion. We don't want that to happen now, do we? Now, I wonder why they didn't want Daniel to get this promotion. Well, maybe it's just because you know how people love power. They love to be in control. They love all the perks and the privileges that goes along with power. Maybe they wanted to be the number two man next to the king. Maybe they thought someday if the king, something happened to the king and, you know, whatever, they'd be the king over the whole realm. So maybe they thought this was a nice little way to help climb the political ladder in the Medo-Persian Empire. So verse 5. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against Daniel unless we find it against him according to the law of his God." So now we got to find something against Daniel in regard to his religious convictions. So now we find the plot being hatched in verse 6. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king. Boy, they made a big commotion before the king. And they said thus to the king, "King Darius, live forever. All the governors," they said to the king, "all the governors of the kingdom, and the administrators, the satraps, the counselors and advisors." Now, do you really think that all the governors of the kingdom, all the administrators and all the satraps and all the counselors and all the advisors, do you think they really all consulted together to come up with this decision? No. They're making it up. They're lying to the king. But anyway, this is what they say to the king. They say, "We have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions." So there's the proposal. Nobody can pray to any god or any human being. No one can petition anyone except the king. And so I suppose the king's thinking about this. This might be a good way to sort of consolidate my kingdom. Maybe a good way to build a sense of loyalty in my kingdom. Everybody's got to pray to me for 30 days. Give me no division or disloyalty in the ranks. And so maybe the king at first sort of went along with this because, well, maybe it fueled his ego a little bit. And of course, if all these governors, satraps, administrative counselors, and officials are all going along with it, well, maybe the king thought, well, maybe I just better go along here. I mean, if everybody in my administration is recommending it, maybe I better go along. Maybe the king was actually scared of his own administration. You ever think about that? Maybe he's scared of these other two governors. Maybe he's scared of these satraps, the counselors, and the advisors. Even though the text doesn't say so, but anyway. Verse 8. So they say to the king, "Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter." Therefore, King Darius, he signed the written decree. Do you see a little touch of irony there? A number of times throughout this passage, they keep talking about the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be changed, it cannot be altered. And yet, they're enacting a decree that's going to expire in 30 days anyway. I mean, the decree that the king is signing is, you might say, it's self-altering. I mean, it's going to alter. It's going to change. It's going to expire in 30 days anyway. And there just seems to be this touch of irony here. They're all worked up about the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked, cannot be overturned, it cannot be changed, and yet it's going to be changed anyway in 30 days. And then you can't help but think the silliness of all this. If this is something that's only good for 30 days, and after 30 days it's no good, maybe it's not good at all, period. So let's see what happens. So we've noticed the plot, the scheming, the conniving of these governors and some of these satraps because they just don't like Daniel. They resent Daniel. And that's often the way it is, even out in the workplace. You get a promotion, you get a raise, you get honored in the workplace, the boss likes you, and everybody knows it, and all of a sudden everybody's jealous and everybody's resenting you. Because they just can't be happy that something's good is happening in your life and the same thing isn't happening in their life. Well, that's human nature. Verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. So what do you think he did? Shut all the windows and decided to stop praying? No. Notice verse 10. So Daniel knew. He knew what was written. He knew the writing was signed. And I would well imagine Daniel knew exactly that this plot, this scheming, all happened because it was directed against him. And he knew that all these people twisted the king's arm to sign the decree because these other governors and these satraps didn't like him. He knew that he was the target of it all. He knew that. So he went to his home, verse 10. And in his upper room, with the windows open, the windows wide open toward Jerusalem, what did he do? He knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. So he wasn't going to change one bit. He was going to keep praying just as he has always prayed, windows open toward Jerusalem, toward the west, and he just did what he always did. Boy, talk about faith, talk about courage. And he knew the consequences. He could be hauled in before King Darius and accused of being unfaithful and insubordinate to his boss, and he knew he could be thrown to the lions. And what would you do? I don't know, I might be tempted to, you know, kind of go pray in the basement, turn the lights off, and say, well, God, I mean, God, you still hear my prayers, don't you? I mean, I can pray. I mean, I could theologically rationalize it. God, I mean, I could be out in the woods hiding behind a big rock, and you could still hear me. You know, I could go in the basement. I could lock myself in the closet, and you'd still hear me. But Daniel said, no, I'm going to keep doing what I've always done. Maybe Daniel knew in the back of his mind that he could keep praying just as he has always prayed. Windows open, the upper room, everybody could see him. Because he knew in the back of his mind, these people were up to no good. And Daniel knew in his own heart that he was right before God. And Daniel knew that God would honor him because he was honoring God. And somehow in the back of Daniel's mind, he knew that his life was in the hands of God and nothing was going to happen to him except what God allowed. And he knew that God would take care of these people that were up to no good. Okay, so verse 11. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Oh, I bet you they were happy to find Daniel praying. Oh boy, we've caught him in the act. And there's witnesses, there's more than one of us that have witnessed Daniel praying, and he's praying to his God. Oh boy, we can't wait to go tell King Darius. Oh boy, we can't wait to let him know. So verse 12, so they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. And so they have to remind the king about what he signed in the law. King, have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. There we have it again for the second time. The law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Verse 13. So they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, notice how they say in a derogatory way, it's not this great and noble Daniel, but it's that Daniel, who was one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. It's that Daniel that is suspicious, that Daniel that is suspect. You know, he's one of the captives from Judah. He was taken from Jerusalem. So, you know, if there's anybody that might be a little disloyal, it just might be that Daniel. You got to watch that Daniel, you know. He might be up to no good. So verse 14, and the king, when he heard these things, was greatly displeased. But displeased with who? Was he displeased with Daniel? No. Was he displeased with the other governors and the satraps? Well, not yet. He will be, eventually. Boy, he will be. Believe you me, he will be upset with them. And they don't know what's coming to them yet. Where do they find out? But he was displeased with what? Himself. Now he probably realizes that he's been so foolish. He's been hoodwinked. He's been jinxed by these other governors and satraps. He's been manipulated. He's been manhandled. And he's the king. He's the great King Darius. And so, it says there, he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Now, I mean, I'm not too familiar with how kings worked in the ancient world. I mean, but I don't know what the problem is. Couldn't he just issue another decree? Couldn't he just call all these other governors in and the satraps in that hatched all of this? Couldn't he just call them all in and sort of read them the riot act? You know, what are you up to? What have you done? You know, tell me the truth and really let them have it. But no, he seems a little weak here. You know, it seems like the other governors and the satraps are having the upper hand. They're the strong ones. They're the ones that are getting to have their way. The king seems a little weak. Reminds me of somebody else who was weak. Remember when Jesus was brought before Pilate? Pilate was weak. He ended up letting the crowd get their way. I see here the same thing with this king, King Darius. He seems a little weak, letting the other governors and the satraps get their way. So verse 15, then these men approached the king, and they said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians, that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." So that's the third time this has to be brought up. The law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be altered. I don't see what the big deal is, but anyway. Verse 16. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Boy, isn't that a great testimony? Daniel has a great testimony. This king already knows that Daniel faithfully, very devotedly, serves his God continually, day and night. And this king must have already have received some sort of idea, some sort of perception of Daniel's God, that he's a great God, that he's a delivering God. Now, keep your finger there in Daniel 6, but go back to Daniel 3. Contrast Nebuchadnezzar. Chapter 3 of Daniel and verse 15. You remember when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were found not bowing down before that great image that Nebuchadnezzar set up, and some of the other Chaldeans went and told on them, and the three of them, these three Jewish men, were brought before Nebuchadnezzar. At the very end of verse 15, Nebuchadnezzar asked the question, "And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" Question mark. That's the end of verse 15. "Who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" said Nebuchadnezzar. But it's quite different now. Darius doesn't seem to have that pride and that pompous attitude, because Darius says, "Daniel, your God whom you serve, he will be able to deliver you." See, back in chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar thought he was the strong God and nobody could deliver out of his hand. On the contrary now, Darius knows that God can deliver Daniel. And a little touch of irony here again. If the king can't deliver Daniel, the king has no recourse except to entrust Daniel to his God. That's the last hope he has, because the king is, well, again, he's being weak. He won't exercise his royal authority to save Daniel, so he has to say to Daniel, "Daniel, I just hope and pray your God will deliver you, because I can't." That's what he's saying. So verse 17, "Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed." See, all of this that's unfolded so far in this chapter represents the determination of men, the determination of human beings, the determination of the other governors, the satraps, and their plot and their conspiracy against Daniel, the determination on the one hand of the king to try to save Daniel, but on the other hand, the king being quite weak. And so Daniel is thrown into the lion's den, and everything is signed and sealed and delivered by the king himself. All of this represents the determination of men. Now we are going to see the determination of God unfold, and that's good news for all of us, because our lives are ultimately being determined by God. We are not those who believe in fatalism. We believe in the sovereignty and the supremacy and the mercy of God. So verse 18. "So now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting." In other words, he didn't eat. You know, there's somebody else not eating that night. The king isn't eating, but the lions are not going to eat either. That's good news for Daniel. So the king is not alone. "The king went to his palace and spent the night fasting." In other words, he didn't eat anything. There was no musicians that were brought before him. Also, his sleep went from him. So the king had a very bad night. He was awake all night. He couldn't sleep. He didn't eat. And he wasn't in any mood to be glad or to make merry with any kind of musicians. He was miserable. Another touch of irony here in the story. So here's Daniel faithfully serving his God, faithfully serving the king. And then these other governors and these other satraps, they act like they're so loyal to the king. But really, they're the ones that are disloyal to the king. The other governors and the satraps, they are the ones that are trying to hurt the king. I mean, the king's miserable. This is not what he wanted. And so, those who may seem to be loyal on the surface are really the disloyal ones. And Daniel, who is very loyal, he's the one being made out to be disloyal, even though he's the most faithful one in the entire administration of King Darius the Mede. So verse 19, then the king arose very early in the morning and he went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice, almost with a crowd voice, a wailing voice, a voice of anguish and misery. And he cried out to Daniel, and the king spoke to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God. Boy, Daniel has quite a reputation. He has quite a testimony. Everybody knows he's the servant of the living God. Everybody knows the God that Daniel serves. And so, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God whom you serve continually. Boy, that's a statement that's been made several times. Daniel serves God continually. Has he been able to deliver you, to rescue you, to save you from the lions? And I suppose there's a dramatic pause. The king's waiting for some sort of answer. He's waiting for some signs of life, and then all of a sudden the Daniel answers and he says to the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and shut the mouths of the lions so that they have not hurt me because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Notice Daniel gives credit to God. It was God who sent his angel to shut all the mouths of the lions. Daniel isn't saying to the king, you know, king, I have some sort of magical powers and I just have a way with lions. I know how to control and manipulate lions. He doesn't say that. He says, my God has sent his angel and God has shut the mouths of all these lions. And then notice how Daniel expresses his vindication here. The lions have done no hurt to Daniel, because Daniel has done no hurt to the king. Just as the king had no dinner that night, neither did the lions have dinner that night. They all went hungry. Daniel was not their dinner. And now also Daniel says flat out, I'm still here, king. I'm still alive. The lions did me no harm because I have done you, O king, no harm. Furthermore, more important than all of that, I was found innocent, the text says, in front of my God. What a testimony on Daniel's part. So, verse 23, then the king was exceedingly glad for Daniel. And so, we see here how the king's anguish, his sleeplessness, all of the bad night that he had represented in verse 18, that's all been overturned the next morning. Then the king was exceedingly glad for Daniel and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the lion's den, and no injury whatever was found on Daniel. And here's the punchline. Because he believed in God. He put all of his faith, all of his trust, all of his confidence in God. That's what we need to learn, to put all of our faith and trust and confidence in God. It's easy to trust God when everything's going well. It's hard to trust God when your life is falling apart. It's hard to trust God when there is very, very real danger lurking on the horizon. Daniel could have been thrown in the lion's den and he could have been torn limb from limb and eaten. He could have had a miserable death, but he didn't. God was with him. God did a miracle because he believed in his God. He was a man of courage, a man of faith, a man of loyalty. And so now we might think, well, what kind of a testimony can we have before others if we keep believing in God? Or to phrase all of this in another way, how can we show our faith in God? Well, it's by our actions. It's by our loyalty. It's by doing God's will. Okay, verse 24. So how's the king going to take all this now? How's the king going to react? Well, the king gave the command and they brought those men who had accused Daniel. And what did the king order? And they cast them into the den of lions. Them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Well, that does seem a little harsh, doesn't it? Not only these people who conspired against Daniel, but their wives, their families, all was given to the lions. key word there in that verse is overpowered. These other governors and these satraps, what were they trying to do? They were up to no good, and they were trying to overpower King Darius the Mede. And the king didn't like it. The king knew that he had been tricked by them, and he had been made a fool and a laughingstock, and he wasn't going to tolerate that anymore. And he wanted to show to others, this is what would happen to them if you try to play with the king. Verse 25. So, the king's going to issue a new decree. In the ancient world, kings just loved to issue decrees. And here again, the irony of it all is that the chapter keeps talking about the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be changed, it cannot be altered, but the king doesn't seem to have any problem issuing all these new decrees all the time. And this decree seems to overturn the previous decree anyway. Maybe a sense of humor, another touch of irony. So then the king wrote, and here's another decree, to all peoples, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. And now notice what the king has come to learn about God because of Daniel's testimony and perhaps the testimony and the witness of other God-fearing Jews in his kingdom. And I say all of this because think about what other people might come to learn about God because of my testimony, because of my witness, and because of your testimony and your witness. So this is what the king writes about God, that he has come to learn about God. For he is what? The living God. And I think by that, maybe the king is trying to imply that God, Daniel's God, is the true God, the God who really does things and is steadfast forever. In other words, God is God forever. He is powerful forever. He is not a God to be toppled and overthrown. His kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed. In other words, God's kingdom and God's sovereignty and the exercise of God's royal authority will last forever and ever and ever. And of his dominion, it shall endure to the end. God delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? Our God is a saving God. That's probably the biggest theme that runs throughout the whole Bible. God is a God who saves, he rescues, he delivers. And God has rescued and saved us in many ways. The fact that we're here tonight shows the saving hand of God. And of course, we always think of and celebrate the salvation that we have in Jesus, our Savior. So again, we see Daniel in a tough spot. We see Daniel being true to his God no matter what the consequences are. We see God vindicating the people who do trust in him. We see God honoring those who honor him. We see God having the last word. As I've read this story, I can't help but think of the New Testament. In another situation where there was a great stone rolled. Remember when Jesus was crucified, he was taken down off the cross, he was placed in the tomb. And a large stone was rolled over the entrance of the tomb in the garden of Joseph of Arimathea. Just as we have a large stone that was rolled over the top of the lion's den, so also a stone was rolled in front of the tomb of Jesus. And guess who had the last word in both stories? God had the last word. Jesus was raised from the dead. He came forth. And all of the conspirators that assembled before Pontius Pilate, all of the chief priests and high priests, all of the crowd that cried out, crucify him and crucify him. We see Pontius Pilate bending in weakness and giving into the crowd. We see the determination of human beings being multiplied before Pontius Pilate. But then in the end, when Jesus came forth from the dead, we see the final determination of God. And that's what we also see in this story, the determination of men that is overridden and overpowered by the determination of God. Well, I started the Bible lesson by saying, man proposes and God disposes. That's good news for all of us tonight, because our lives are in the hands of God, the God who lives forever, the God who saves, the God who is steadfast, the God whose kingdom never, never fails. So, keep on believing, keep on trusting, and let's persevere, and let's pray. Lord God, we thank you for your word. Oh Lord, how encouraging, how inspiring to read your word. And Lord, we know all of these stories, all of these events have been recorded for us in the book of Daniel precisely to give us courage in the face of danger, to help us to persevere, to help us to keep on believing in the midst of hard times and difficulties or the threat of persecution. And so, Lord, help us to rise up with all of the courage of Daniel and truly be true to you. Bless each one that is here. We ask for Jesus' sake. Amen.